Je ne veux pas travailler, je ne veux pas déjeuner, je veux seulement oublier. Et puis je fume. Déjà j'ai connu.
Pink Martini there with Sympathique. Je ne veux pas travailler. Or otherwise known as I don't want to work. Well, it is back to the daily grind for many people this week, maybe you, and that likely means getting used to a deluge of email and demands from the boss. Not if you're in France, though. This week, the right to disconnect laws that were passed early last year came into effect. Basically, they give employees the right to legally ignore emails outside of work hours to find out how that's being received. Today's Global Roaming takes us to Paris. Tamara Thiessen is an Australian journalist based there. Tamara, thanks for joining the program.
Good morning, Hamish. Thank you.
As someone that checks email and all the rest of it pretty obsessively, this sounds pretty good.
Well, exactly. The French have got a way out of that, though. So, yes, it's a very interesting law, and they're claiming that it's a world first. So they've brought in this law that basically to limit burnout and stress, and it's primarily aimed at executives who are apparently in our always connected age, the most vulnerable to such ills, and that probably applies in Australia as much as in France.
What exactly does the right to disconnect, as it's described, look like? What is actually enshrined in the law?
Well, the law is a little bit vague, and that's the unions are basically pointing the finger at that and saying, well, we did get this thing pushed through, but it has come out a little bit more wishy-washy than we hoped. The law is really a law to déconnexion, to shut off, and so it's basically stipulating that businesses of 50 staff and upwards must now, from January the 1st, negotiate with workers, in its words, measures to regulate the use of digital tools in order to respect rest and leave time and personal and family life. And if no agreement is struck between the company, they then have to draw up a charter defining the way that this law can be put into action. And this is where it all starts getting a bit waffly.
I know, having spent time working in France, you know, they're not afraid of the odd strike, the odd protest. How did these changes go down? Were there any strikes or protests?
Well, there have been strikes and protests because this law comes amid a huge wave of workplace reform laws, which have not been going down well at all with the French, with workers' unions. And the whole thing is really polarising public and political opinion. It all comes back to the famous 35-hour French working week introduced by socialist Prime Minister Léonard Jospin in 2000. And I think there's this many, many kind of cliches of the Gallic work culture that have come with that. Right now, we're seeing quite a bit of change in store with efforts to modernise France, clearly, to kind of get round that 35-hour week law. And that's been led by the former economy minister, who's now sort of resigned from that place to run as a presidential contender, Emmanuel Macron, the famous Macron laws. And his motto, interestingly, is work hard, play harder. So it ties in with the song that you played at the beginning of this show. So, and he basically has been trying to sweep in changes to that law so that employers can get round that 35-hour week.
You're right in saying that there's a lot of stereotypes of the Gallic approach to work. You pointed out that France has this 35-hour working week. What are productivity levels like in France, though? I know that sort of comparing like for like in Europe, maybe France is not doing as badly as one might have thought based on those perceptions.
Well, you've hit the button on the head there, actually, Hamish, because there are They're basically studies showing, and from the OECD, that, okay, the French might work 35 hours a week, but they actually are very productive in that time. Aussies apparently work an average 36 hours a week. The French work less hours than the US, so that would not be a surprise to anybody, and than other countries, including Japan, Mexico, and Spain. But they apparently work more hours than some European counterparts, including the Germans, surprisingly, and the Danes. The thing is, the French really are not doing so badly, but they're not doing so well. I'd much rather be in Australia for the salary. You know, their salary is apparently about five and ten rank to Australia's. They're ten in a ranking of ten, whereas Australia's five in ranking of salaries post tax. So 31,000 in Australia compared to some 25,000 in France. So they're definitely getting less butt for their work put in.
And what else is dominating the headlines in France at the start of the new year? Is it all eyes towards the presidential election?
Well, the presidential election is obviously a very big one, as is terrorism, terrorism as usual. And obviously with Istanbul, that's become, again, the ordre du jour, but also with French President François Hollande on a trip to Baghdad predicting a year of victories against terrorism. Well, obviously, again, Turkey has clouded that headline a bit. And yes, as you say, if not the presidential election for next April is making headlines every day, and it's always in the background.
And is Hollande, still rock bottom in the popularity polls?
Well, he's so rock bottom that he pulled out of he basically announced that he won't be running in the presidential race, and that's an historic decision to not. For a president in France not to run for a second term. So the sort of interesting thing at the moment is with the right-wing candidate basically decided in their primary vote last month, now we're sort of looking to the socialists, and I've just been seeing a news story about, is there any hope left for the socialists? And that's a little bit of the mood of the day here in France. The socialists are in great disarray. They don't seem to be doing themselves any favour by basically coming up with this cascading role of candidates for next year for their primary vote, which will be held at the end of January. And then, of course, in the backdrop, there's the spectre of Marine Le Pen hanging in there, even if pollsters here are saying that a Trump-like surprise is way less likely in France. A surprise is just that, isn't it, Hamish? And there's always a possibility for as long as it's there. Same pollsters are predicting that Marine Le Pen, the far-right leader, will take one of the top two spots in April's first round election. Well, that's a bit too close for comfort for some of us, I guess.
Yeah, and why is it still unlikely, given that, as you say, the socialists are in disarray? And it looks in all likelihood like it would be a runoff between Marine Le Pen and the Conservatives.
Well, I think that it's really speculative. I mean, for as long as she's been given a chance to take one of the top two spots, and then with the runoff election in May not winning. But that's just some pollsters here saying that. We've seen what happened with Trump. It's too likely to rule it out as a total impossibility, given the recent populist victories in Italy, for a start, and with the Brexit vote, which was another populist victory in its own right. So there's definitely always a chance that, something could happen and Marine Le Pen could end up as France's first ever far-right president. I mean,
You there because we have to get to the news, but we appreciate your time this morning.
A pleasure. Thank you very much.
Tamara Thiessen, an Australian journalist based in France.